Santa's Workshop, huh?
Yeah.
We are live. Well, live between me and you. This isn't a live podcast. I'm here. This is a Breckening podcast, by the way. Let's just cut right into it. I'm here with Darren Collins, who is just flown in for the podcast.
Yeah. Only for the podcast.
From a separate continent in which he has lived for... Okay, I want to start off with how...
The beginning.
The beginning of how I... Okay, I'm not sure if you remember this. Do you remember us talking in my family's kitchen? This was probably about almost 20 years ago.
I remember, well, now it's way loud. I remember I remember a refrigerator.
Okay, yeah, that's where we had it. We had it in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I think you and my sister like maybe went on just like a couple of dates or something
right,
like that.
Right, right.
And then let's say I was like 18, 19 or whatever at the time. And she told you that, you know, I was a big fan of stand-up comedy. I was
okay.
A couple of years from even, you know, I didn't even know what an open mic was.
Oh, and then, okay.
You're just this guy that was there hanging out. And she mentioned that you were a stand-up comic. And then I'm not sure if it was that conversation as well. But what's funny is years later when I started doing comedy, you were around.
Uh-huh.
You know, you lived, you're still, you know, based in America.
Right.
And so, and what I want to say, this is the story you said in that kitchen. I literally tell this multiple times a year, where
I have no idea what you're going to say right now.
No. I have no recollection. We're talking, and I'm just nerding out about stand-up comedy. I've never met a stand-up comic before. I love it.
I'm really nervous.
No, and so you're telling me about. So again, this had to be 2003, 2004, 2005, something in that area.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe 2002. Anyways, so you mentioned about, started talking about stand-up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, talking about all my favorite stand-ups. And you talk about this time you went to the Improv to go see Mitch Hedberg.
Oh, yeah.
And so you went there, and that's where I first learned that, you know, local comics can go see the show.
Uh-huh.
You see the show for free.
Yeah.
And so you went there because you were a big fan of Mitch Hedberg, and he was doing clubs at the time. So he's probably starting to peak or whatever.
Yeah.
You were in tune with him because you're a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And you went there, and the club was like, man, Darren, we'd love to let you in, but it's so sold out.
Yeah.
We can't let anybody in. And you're like, oh, you're a little dejected. You're like, oh.
I was like, can I stand in the back? And they're like, no, there's not even standing.
Not even that. And then you went to, like, you know, Improv's on the second floor, and you went outside where, like, the employee,
uh-huh.
you know, the kitchen entrance is. Kitchens again.
Yeah.
And you went out there, and apparently coming out of the back of that exit, wearing a robe and smoking a pipe was Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. I was going down the stairs.
Oh,
he was coming up the stairs.
Oh, okay. Even better. All right. And so just pure happenstance.
Yeah.
Cross paths. And then I think, you know, you probably introduced yourself to him. He's a big fan. Local comic came here to see the show. So sold out. That what I always say, you know, in the Mitch Hedberg voice, you know, when I tell this uh-huh. story, is just like, oh, man, that's okay. You're with me now.
Yeah.
And that is that.
Okay, so that's exactly what happened. It's slightly good. Better than that. Actually,
oh, even sweet,
because
sweet.
All I did is I said, "Have a good show, Mitch."
Oh,
and he goes, "You're not coming to it?" And I go, "Oh no, there's no more room."
That's even more humble.
And he goes, "No more room? Nah, man, you're with me now."
Oh.
That was all the words. Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, so he initiated it totally. I was just passing and saying, "Good show." Oh. You're not coming in? Oh no, I can't. Are. You're with me now.
Oh, man.
And I just walked in. He put his arm around me, went in the door.
That's so badass.
It was so great.
And that, I, you know, there's moments where I'm like, and that's where I wanted to be a stand-up comic. It wasn't.
Right.
Even after seeing my first stand-up comedy show ever, which was the Insomniac Tour. So in order, it was Mitch Hedberg, Louis Black, and Dave Attell.
Yeah, I saw that show.
At the Majestic, uh-huh. yeah.
And he was in the back, and I saw him there, too.
Oh, wow.
And I was talking to Mitch, and he just goes, "Hey, man, have you met Lewis?" And I was like, "What?" And then behind me is Lewis Black. I'm like, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is happening."
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, see, and I wish I could say, you know, oh, I went and saw that comedy show and that lineup, those legends.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that's when I wanted to be a stand-up comic. It wasn't. No, I was hanging out with my buddy Philip, uh-huh. and we've been smoking weed and, uh-huh. like, starting to write jokes. And he was just like, "Let's go do an open mic." And I was like, "What's an open mic?" And then he told me what those were, and I was like, "Oh, okay." then we did it. So that's when I first met you. It was that kitchen, in my kitchen.
Real quickly, I told that story recently in Kenya.
I would tell it all the time.
And Justine Wanda, she's blowing up in East Africa and just started working in South Africa too. And she goes, Darren, that's like a comedy fairy tale story.
And I was like, yeah, yeah. So that's where I knew. And then I started doing stand up. And then I would see you. You're a man of many talents. And then, so I knew you as a stand up. And maybe my sister mentioned, you know, some other things you did. But I remember that conversation about stand up and the Mitch Hedberg story. And then you're also, and again, I'm going back like 15, almost 15 years with stand up comic, but also a professional juggler.
Yeah.
Magician too.
I wouldn't call it professional. Okay, but just because I'm being, because it's not very good.
Okay,
but yeah, but I did it for money. So yeah.
Okay, no, that's good. And then at the time, was it puppeteer as well, or yeah? Is that...
So when you met me, I had sort of finished my puppetry career.
Okay,
but and I was just doing solo, comedy, magic, and juggling.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, and so that's where you're this guy, and you occasionally have like parties in DeSoto. One I think I missed. I was going to come to.
In Waxahachie.
Waxahachie. Yeah. And I was like, I think one I was sincerely going to come to and didn't for, whatever reason. Who knows? So long ago.
Yeah.
So that's what you are or was until about 15 years ago. That's what you were.
Yeah.
Or are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and then at some point, I'm not sure when you can fill it. And then you moved to Kenya.
Yeah.
With Project Hands Up.
Hand Up.
Hand Up.
Yeah. Hands Up sounds like you're going to rob somebody.
Yeah. Might as well make it singular. And so what is Project Hand Up?
So what happened was I was doing all the gigs you're talking about, and I was just kind of like, what's the point? Like,
the sweet spot of comedy.
I got to the place where I was performing mostly in theaters. But mostly like juggling, but I always had a sort of a message. It was like some sort of positive message of some sort. And so I was spoiled. Like I was doing like, it was always at least 300 people in an audience, but usually between 500 and 1500. And so that was my life on the road. And it was like 70 gigs a year, probably. Mm. It was great. And the money was really good. But, I was like, I want to make this more meaningful. I had a bunch of life things happen. So I was like, I can do anything I want. Like, why not just do anything you want instead of what you are doing? Like, let's figure this out. Like, what can you do that would be more fun or better or whatever? And so Project Hand Up is the long and short of it. It's a charity that now does behavior change communication in developing countries, specifically Kenya. And we use the performing arts as a way to communicate health messages, basically.
Okay.
And so it's I basically create the live and televised version of what you might think of as Sesame Street, except for it's all health.
Okay.
That's kind of the fastest way to say it. Mm. Yeah, because I stand-up comedy is my, like, the best thing in the world, but I'm not good enough to make a career out of that. And but I still pursue it, like, relentlessly.
In Kenya. Yeah, that's...
But puppetry is, like, my favorite thing to watch. Okay. I've always just loved watching puppets. Since I was a kid, I just obsessed with it. And so, and that art form is particularly special because, like, I think comics would probably be able to perceive this a little bit, that it's the one art form where you can sort of say anything to any age audience and sort of get away with it. So if there's a taboo subject or a difficult subject or a really challenging subject, if you use a puppet like a proxy instead of a human or a human actor, you're given sort of special allowances to say things that you might not otherwise be able to say, especially if it's entertaining, if it's really, really funny.
Yeah.
And using stand-up comedy as a backbone for what is funny sort of helps a lot of other performing arts forms. Like, and so all that to say that the puppetry is a great way to express yourself for sort of nonfiction subjects. And I just love it. I love using that particular art form to make meaningful change in people's lives. We make actually HIV and AIDS like fun to watch, to learn about, like kids, like people are laughing and stuff.
Yeah.
We're talking about people dying, and it's contextualized in such a way where it's actually super funny.
Oh, okay.
In fact, all of my translations are done by stand-up comedians.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a really serious charity. We actually work with like some of the biggest non-government organizations in the world, and they hire us to create content about like intestinal worms and stuff like that. And these are scientists who are like at the top of their class, and I'll bring in a local stand-up comic to the meetings. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, nothing gets on paper and nothing gets through without a stand-up comedian translating it and also approving the language, because the scientists will screw this up.
I wish stand-up in America was treated with that kind of respect. That'd be nice.
Well, yeah, at least you can make a living at it. That's cool.
So when the puppets, when you're performing, are they using the local language?
Sometimes. Because there's two national languages in Kenya, and it's Swahili and English.
Okay.
So to make it sort of cross borders, we do tend to use English a little bit more. But it works better in Swahili if we're actually just targeting just local only. Yeah, we certainly try to do it in Swahili or mother tongue languages. Like, there's like 47 languages there.
In Kenya alone.
Yeah.
And I know the number is even bigger, just, you know, heck, just bottom part of Africa. Like,
yeah,
there's so many languages.
Yeah, there's tons.
Oh, yeah.
And so what's really cool is no one, for the most part, have ever heard like a character speak their language. There's never a cartoon, an animation, or a puppet that's ever really spoken like Kamba and Kikuyu and Meru and Embu and Luya and Luo. They're just, and so people are like, whoa, they're very, very, very attracted to it because they've never heard like a talking like lion speak their language. Mm. And so, well, a lot of times we use animals because it's a little weird to use a human sometimes for certain messages. It feels weird. So we'll actually use animals, but then the animals are speaking their language, and it's like the people sit up and listen.
Wow.
It's cool.
Okay. Yeah. It's so weird. Like, it must be fascinating seeing that, because we, you know, in America, we have Sesame Street.
Yeah.
That's such commonplace that, you know, a giant bird, you know, a big woolly mammoth,
yeah,
you know, a Grover-looking thing.
Uh-huh.
Is telling us things and teaching us things.
Yeah.
And that's so, it's like ingrained in us. It's not.
Yeah. Like 1969, 70, 71 is when Sesame Street launched, and it just became, okay, that became normal.
And you had the Muppets for the adults.
Yep.
And then, you know, you can have your offshoots like Avenue Q, you know, things that are, you know, extremely adult and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's even my friend Avery Moore. She's a comic in Austin. She opened up for, it's a British person. As a puppet doing stand up.
I know this guy. It's got a funny name. Oh yeah, he's.
There's an F.
Does he sit behind a desk?
Yes.
Yeah, he's really talented.
Yeah, and I've seen clips, and she was.
It's like a weird Brundlefly of like stand up and puppetry.
Yeah. And I saw clips of that, and she was just a late. And my friend Avery is almost like a puppet in and of herself. Like, she's just one of those people. Amazing stand up, you know. Great human being. And she was like, I only want to open up for puppets now.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, hey, that's such an Avery.
Well, you don't want to go after the puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you got to open for him because one likes to follow. Yeah. No one wants to follow a ventriloquist or a magician.
Rather
or a
follow
juggler.
A guitar comic.
No, you know? You don't want to.
Give me that. I'm not following a
puppet. That's the thing. Everyone always like, why don't you do puppets on stage? Or why don't you juggle when you know? I'm like, no. But stand up's pure. Like, I'm not going to be the guy that shows up and throws things in the air. I'm not going to be the guy who shows up and, like, does a magic trick, because this is comedy. This is stand-up comedy. I try to keep it real pure. I separate my art forms.
Oh, I was trying to look at that guy, but my internet sucks here. Anyways, it don't matter. Oh, this flea something. Okay, here we go. Do. Oh, yeah. Dead spot.
Is it Randy? Oh. Randy Woolhead or something.
Yeah, like, it's like, it's very like on the like, nose. It's,
yeah, it is what it says. It is.
Here we go. Randy Feltface.
Feltface.
There
wow.
We go, yeah.
I said Woolhead. That was not
and
bad.
Like, just look at, again, audio only podcast. It's great for, you know, but she's just, you know, I'll go down to Austin soon. I'm going to, you know, to be continued.
Wait,
I will,
he's in Austin right now?
No, she is. Okay. But I'm going to go to Austin.
I'll go to Austin
soon.
To see a puppet show.
And I'm going to hit up her for the podcast. So,
okay.
Well, we can go
Randy
part
Feltface.
Two of
Learn About Puppets.
Puppetry and Comedy.
Yeah.
We hear about Randy Feltface. But the clips are great. And it's kind of even just, and like, that's just a great design. He's just like a
real simple. There's no hair.
Pinkish, light purple.
Yeah, it's like a
bald.
Talking stomach.
Yeah.
But he's wearing a suit and like the whole.
And that way any costume can fit on that. And it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen different clips.
It's really high energy. Like he's a, yeah. he's a legit stand up comic who's just. And the posture of that guy, I want to see behind the scenes and see how his posture is because he really moves around a
lot. I think they'll let you.
Yeah. They'll let me. Yeah. Dude, I got one time I saw Jeff Dunham and I was like, I'm a puppeteer. And we were talking about making a puppet because he needed some more puppets and stuff. And he was totally free, you know, with his equipment. We're at the improv in Addison and the show was over. And I was like, hey, man, can I try your puppet? And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he's like, wait. And just as he said, wait, I put my hand inside of one of those puppets and it was, and he's like, because it's full, it's gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's really after a show, like it's so gross. And I was like, oh, I forgot. Like it's obvious. Like you don't put your hand in someone's puppet like after a show.
Yeah,
it's disgusting. Like if you met your favorite boxer, you wouldn't be like, hey man, can I wear your mouthpiece?
Oh, I thought you were gonna say glove. I know. Oh my god. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, yes.
Like it's just so like it's so obvious. Don't do that.
Oh wait. Oh, never mind. Yeah, that's why you're just like, yeah, I'm in here anyways. Might as well mess around.
I know. That's what I did. I'm in here anyways. I'll make him talk.
I'll just go wash my hands after.
Yeah. But honestly, it's so funny because like I think there's some amount of like stereotype about ventriloquist guy Jeff Dunham. But like the first time I saw him was in '97 in Vegas in a small room, and it was probably the hardest I'd ever laughed up at that point. I mean, I was 19 or something, but that was. It hurt, like my sides hurt. Yeah. It was like a really free and fun and fast and perfect show when he was a lot younger and a lot more raw. And it was just amazing. I laughed so hard. I think, and until after that, I think Brian Regan was like the second person who physically made me hurt, like hurt and pain watching. Who's hurt you before, like watching laugh?
I saw in Fort Worth in like a 90 person, I want to say about 90 person small black box theater called Amphibian.
Uh-huh.
Kyle Kinane.
Yeah,
and I think it was either like just he was there for two shows in one night or something like that. But that was I want to say that was right before he recorded Whiskey Icarus, something like that. And that was I left. Stomach hurt.
Yeah,
it literally felt like a workout.
Yeah, it's such
a, and I was in the front row too.
Oh,
and I saw he was at the Improv last fall, and you know saw him there at a club. You know, you know, funny guy, is one of my favorite comics. But that was it was so there, and well, it's great. It's a small little black box theater, and this in the play they had at the time was about like Einstein or something. So it was the only background, very minimalist.
Uh-huh.
The only background was like two chalkboards with equations on them.
Uh-huh.
The perfect backdrop. Like it was just great. Just, you know, just.
He's just riffing.
It made sense or didn't, but like the backdrop was great. You know, it wasn't like someone's dingy apartment or something like that, which still would have been great.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
But it was just that. And it was like so like personal, you know, intimate because there's like 90 people there. And it was just so funny. The opener, Dave Ross, really funny guy.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up booking him a couple of years later at a venue down the street that I booked for a while.
I never went to Black Box. I think I left town before that.
For Amphibian, it was just a Black Box
theater. A Black Box thing. I don't know if I ever saw a Black Box show. They're like a production company.
No. That's the like the type of theater, right?
Oh,
there's like a type of.
But
theater.
Isn't there a production company that they named themselves Black Box?
There was back in the day. I was Black Box. So my friend Jamie and
that was Jamie Kinzer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's she what ran, I thought you were saying.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, even though I was Black Box comedy, that's what I did, and that we only just did bar shows at bar. But
I didn't know it was named after a style of theater.
Yeah,
like I have no education.
No, I learned that from knowing people in theater.
Okay.
That's how, yeah.
Okay. So like the Dallas Comedy House, but the first one was a Black Box, right?
I think so. Yeah. Like the style. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm learning something. I think plenty of those, if you don't have like millions of dollars, you just call it Black Box. And I was just like, oh, okay.
Oh.
Oh, it's punk. It's probably the punk rock of the comedy world.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We need to build one in Nairobi. That'd be cool.
But I think because you probably just have, you know, maybe the hardest wood you can afford or something. Uh-huh. And just paint it black. Uh-huh. And it's just like, good enough.
Good, yeah, it's not just good.
Lights
good
work enough. Well. It's all black. We can throw whatever shit together from a thrift store we can find.
Yeah.
And let's do a play.
That's cool. But it's amazing that you can actually that there's a style of entertainment that can make your sides hurt, like physically hurt in a right. good, in a, you're glad and it's the best.
You can be at a baseball game or something and cheer, and you know, you might be, you know, a little exhausted or anything, but it's like nothing's gonna hurt afterwards.
Right.
Your throat might be sore from cheering.
And there's like only two other, I think politicians and preachers and comedians are the only ones who do that style of talking where it's like you're going after emotion and you're just, it's just you talking only.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other colleagues that we have besides, right? Is it politicians and yeah. preachers? No one else holds a mic and just goes, but they
unless
don't.
You're, well, some
TED talk,
some
maybe
corporate bullshit.
Yeah.
Corporate
motivational speakers. Yeah. That would be like another one. Yeah, sure. That's us. And we're way funnier. So, yeah,
we are, but, we don't get the motivational speaker kind of money. Or corporate trainers. That I had a buddy that was.
Although, I wonder if there's open mics for corporate trainers.
No, or they just make them go to open mics. Yeah. And just go. Just try practice. To write some. You know, try to get 5 minutes of your presentation out of the way, and you know, see how it feels. Or they just take speech classes.
Yeah. They have such. It's so the expectation's so much lower for those guys. Like everyone's like, oh, my preacher's so funny. It's like, no, he's not. You just have no expectation for
him. He's funny in the context of the congregation and the...
He's like a hot chick.
The things you're allowed to talk, to laugh at and not. And
yeah.
You're like, hey, it's Sunday. It's 9 a.m. Anything's going to be fucking funny to
me. Anything. There's just no... There's a very low bar. And people... I've been to a couple of things where politicians are speaking and they make the audience laugh. And I'm just like, what's going on? That was not funny. You're just, it's a, such a weird.
Oh, yeah, it's the most hack shit you've ever heard.
It's
you're
the
like,
worst.
It's just the talking point that any political party has about the other one.
Yeah. And it's like the audience is so relieved that he's being light that they just give him like so much allowance for what they will laugh at. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't want my politicians relatable in that kind of way.
No.
Like, you do a job that, like, one, you're not getting hired. You're trying to get votes to get elected to do a job. That's a weird way to seek out. It's not even a career. It's a position for a limited amount of time. Yeah. And
but it,
for the most part.
Yeah, it becomes a career.
You're soliciting our vote and, like, to do something that's damn serious.
Super serious.
That affects... So many,
and you're
things.
Gonna take any moment at all to make a joke. Like, stop. This is the most serious job you could have. Like, you don't need to be telling jokes at all or trying, especially.
I don't even want your voice to fluctuate so much. That displays a little unseriousness about you.
Yeah,
I want you to be monotone.
Yeah, one of the things that
I
happened,
want you to sound like Ben Stein.
One of the things that happened before I quit my career and started a charity is I've been doing the same show for a couple of years, and it was like tight. It was perfect. It was like exactly what it needed to be for the audience. And I had gone overseas for something. I don't remember what it was, but I just come back, and I was in Albuquerque possibly doing a gig, and it was the same show as always, 45 minutes, about 1,000 people or whatever. And I made some sort of comment where I said something like, it's good to be back. I've been overseas. It's good to be back or whatever. And in the middle of the show that doesn't normally change, but I just made that comment because it was true. And I don't remember how I was juggling something or something, whatever. But when I finished the bit, the applause was bigger. I was like, this is undeserved. But I did change the line. I said, it's good to be back. I've been gone for a while. And so the next night I was like, let me just tweak this. And I said, it's good to be back in America. Instead of, come on. And at the end of the show, I got a standing ovation. Now, I'm obviously not telling the full, whatever, but that was the key difference. And I was like, wait, I inadvertently appealed to their patriotism, and it changed the way the audience reacted completely to a standing ovation. I was like, this is dangerous.
Oh, wow. Oh, like, gave you like an insight as to
like how easily people are manipulated. I mean, I did it on purpose. I definitely was like, oh, let me try the word America instead.
Oh.
And it totally worked. And I was like, I know my show. I don't get standing ovations.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary. Like, it's not that good, right? But this time I did. And all I did is say, like, I'm back in America. And this is, like, dangerous stuff I'm playing with here. And I was like, I don't need to be in this
business.
Wow,
that must have given you such an insight as to, explaining why anyone attaches their, you know, so much of their like being to certain like political candidates, especially the most charismatic ones.
Right.
That which probably the most historically is most dangerous shit.
Right.
I'm super likable as a human being. Also, I'm going to go out and try to get your vote so I can get me some of that sweet, sweet power.
Yeah.
Which and you can have a lot of money and have some power, but just having power without, you know, they got, you know, plenty of them got plenty of money, but yeah. Without like get people giving you the power. That's nuts. You can buy power, right. But it's kind of cheap because, you know, you can
and the fact that there's like a hack to get them to give you the power.
Yeah.
By just like saying words differently. Like comedians probably don't not many comedians tap into it. We know a couple that have tapped into patriotism to get like big responses and get a following. But for the most part, we don't tap into that. But politicians and preachers, they're just like, oh, there's a hack. I can get more money if I say it this way.
Yeah.
I went to a political rally. Here in Dallas, Dallas has the second largest population of Kenyans in the world outside of Kenya.
Okay,
they're all here, and so when it is time for elections,
kind of like Euless with Tongans,
probably
same thing there.
I'm sure it's true. Like, yeah, Laotians and whatever. But the presidential candidates come here to get the expatriate vote.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So one time President Uhuru was coming up for re-election, and so he came to Dallas, and I saw that he was coming to Dallas, and it said to just present your passport and you can or your Kenyan ID,
okay,
and you can go to this thing. It's free. And it was at the convention center, Dallas Convention Center. So I show up, and it's like, you know, several thousand Kenyans and me. Yeah. And the security guys come over to me, these huge security guys, Dallas guys, like, hey, hey, yeah, yo, come here. I'm like, what? And they're like, hey, the comic book convention is on the other side of that. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not here for the comic book convention. They're like, what? And I'm like,
pull out your Kenyan ID.
Yeah, yeah, pull out your Kenyan ID. They're like, oh, okay.
You want to see a magic trick?
Check this out.
I'm actually here, very interested in what's about to transpire.
So there was one other white dude there eventually once we got inside.
But he just wrote for the Dallas Morning News.
Probably. But yeah, the dude just like that. I mean, he's this opportunity to talk to his constituents who've been living overseas, and he just cracked jokes, made them all laugh, saying awful stuff. he's avoiding all of the really important things that the Kenyan people really care about, but he just hoodwinked them. Just got everybody to start laughing.
Like they can read the issues.
There was people
online
all around me who had legitimate questions for this guy about the political future of this country, et cetera. And he just made them laugh. Like, oh, what a waste.
It's like, I flew all this way here. I'm not talking serious topics with you guys.
All I do is run like the third largest economy on the continent.
Yeah.
You guys want to get a drink?
Oh, hey guys, my arms are tired. I flew here. Oh, this guy is great.
We love him. We'll vote
when's
for
the election? Just tell him he's got my vote now.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
So what?
Let me tell you about comedy in Kenya.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't really know where to go next. I mean, there's so many continue.
Comedy. Let's talk about comedy.
Yeah,
yeah. It's so good. It's such a good thing. So during COVID, there was a couple guys. There's two guys, Doug Muntai, and he had spent quite a bit of time in Canada, and he'd done some comedy festivals there. And so he had traveled a lot of Canada doing clubs, but he's a Kenyan dude. And I think it was like during university or something like that. Like he went to school there. And then he ended up going back to Kenya, but he had like the chops of a road comic in Canada. So, you know, those 4 or 5 or 6 years he was there. And then there's another guy who is named Eric Lusavali, and he's also a Kenyan dude, and he also is just a huge fan of comedy. And I kind of met him through some message boards for expatriates on Facebook, but he was just running it as a Kenyan dude, just running an expatriate like message board, and we talked comedy a little bit. But what happened is during the pandemic, people were looking for outdoor things to do, and they both sort of independently launched like English stand-up comedy in like 2020 in Kenya. And there was some guys who were doing English. There was one guy whose parents made him do more English than Swahili. And he worked for a comedian that was a Swahili comedian. And he would open all the shows and just bomb because no one wanted to hear English. Yeah. And his English was really good. But he bombed for like years and years. But he was, so he has balls of steel. And his name, hold on. I just forgot his name. I'll think of it later. So these guys had a real passion for English stand-up comedy, and they just started putting on shows and building up a mailing list. But the thing is like, who hasn't done that in the comedy community yeah. in America? Like, you get into comedy, you put up some shows, you do some open mics. You know, a lot of guys, not all the comics start open mics, but a lot of us, like, will try a couple, you know. But they are, like, virtuosos. They take it so absolutely seriously that they won't start an open mic unless the venue is good for comedy. And then once they do get that venue, they make sure there's photographers there. They make sure their social media is on point. And so almost every open mic there is reservation only seating.
Wow.
And most of them sell out. For an open mic, so people don't pay to go.
Program, I can get those guys here.
I know. It's so amazing.
Dirt bags.
Yeah, but the middle class there is just like, we watched it on Netflix. We've never seen it in person, so almost no one has any experience watching a stand-up comedy show.
And it's so much different in person, which
it's way, way, way better.
I meet people this day, you know, they're like, "Oh, you just stay in LA." They'll come see me. It's the first comedy show I've ever seen. I'm like, "Wow, really?"
It's so weird how many people haven't been.
And they're like, "Oh, I watch comedy all the time." It'll turn, by that, they mean Netflix, and,
right.
you know, HBO.
Right.
And I was like, "You've never seen it live? Because it spoils you."
Yeah.
Because how many times you see it live, and then you're like, you see like a good clip, you're like, "All right, yeah, that's fine. Maybe watch a special." You're like, "Oh, yeah. That's good." But you're like, live is just...
Live is so good that's one of the things I've started to get the guys... Because one night I was hosting, and at the end of the show, I said, "Hey, listen, everybody, thank you for coming out and supporting local comedy. But I want you to think of something. The experience you just had, you're probably going to forget all of our names when you go home. And if your friends ask you, who's your favorite stand-up comedian, you're probably going to say Kevin Hart. But never have you been watching Kevin Hart on Netflix or YouTube. Have you laughed as hard as you did tonight? Mm-hmm. You may love him, and he still is your best, your favorite, but you've never laughed this hard because this is live." And everyone's like, "Yeah, like don't forget this good time that you had, and make sure you tell your friends, and come back for another show." And it makes sense because like that really is true. Like Brian and Darren are not anyone's favorite stand-up comedy. I don't think
stand-up
comic,
so,
but they're gonna have a way better time watching us live than they will watching a Netflix special.
It's kind of like,
do you think that's universally true?
I think so. It's the same with me with music. It's just if. So many times I know, like you listen to a band, and eventually get around to seeing them live, and mm-hmm. you know, you're like, "Oh, that was great." If I'm gonna go see a band that I know and like, and then there's like another band that I'm probably gonna like,
mm-hmm.
I purposely do not listen to them. If I know the genre and kind of
right.
like, you know, who they sound like, I won't listen to them, especially if I know like in a week I'm gonna see them live.
Yeah,
because it's just. I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to see him live." If I'm going to see him like 6 months from now, yeah, I'll listen to him.
Okay.
But if I know it's right around the corner, I'm going to go see them live.
Uh-huh.
It's going to sound so different from just, you know, me driving around listening to them on Spotify. Because there's so much just not in the
yeah.
equation. Audibly. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm there. I'm going to see them. You know, it's going to be louder. The sound's going to be more full. Just because
yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah,
you know, there's
yeah.
a guy professionally mixing this all together live and
right,
all that.
Right.
And just... And like same thing like live stand up, you know, that first show, you know that mm-hmm. Insomniac tour, I was like, because I could devour stand up comedy, all the Premium
right.
Blends, Comedy Central Presents, had albums, DVDs.
So your first show was Dave Attell?
Yeah,
awesome.
I forget the
yeah,
opener.
Great.
Do you remember the opener?
Yeah, it was Lewis, and it was Mitch Hedberg.
Well, there was
there was a fourth person, wasn't there?
And he had a joke about not Boone's building. Farm, but a certain kind of wine. It's like blah blah wine for your first time. And I talked to some comics, and one person I think remembered, and I don't think it was Brendan Walsh.
No,
it was something, similar to that.
I can't remember who it was, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah, poor guy.
Right? I always just assumed if Mitch was on the show, it would have been Lynn, but not that wasn't.
But that, yeah, that was so different. I hadn't even been to a comedy club. Hell, I may not have been to a comedy club till after I, you know, started doing stand up. Like,
that's great. Well, what's also awesome with these guys is they understand that their audience hasn't is new. And so they actually explain the expectation of the audience before every open mic begins. Like the host says, hey.
Very cognizant of them.
Yeah, they get it because they're like, we need to grow this scene. We're never going to make a living at this until we have X amount of fans and X amount of comedians to meet the demand of these fans. So they're constantly workshopping new comedians to get them to write material. And they're constantly drawing in open mics to get in new audience members and then training them, basically saying, this is a form of free speech, so you're going to hear stuff you don't want to hear because this is what we do. So don't get offended because you're going to hear everything. And then second of all, shut up, you know, don't be talking. I know you're drinking, but like you're watching us. It's what you're here for. They say it nicely.
Yeah.
And then also they say, don't take any video. Like that's off the table. Like you can do boomerangs or pictures.
Yeah.
But here's how you tag us on social media, and they make it fun and everything. But basically, you got a whole culture that's never seen a live comedy show, but none of their peers have either. We kind of knew how to behave when we went to our first comedy show, but these guys, they were sort of used to the Swahili style, which is what before these English guys came up, the stand up there would oftentimes be. Scenario based, where like they're pretending to be a teacher or and then they're talking to their student, and it's all like sort of like almost like
Bob Newhart-y.
Yep, a lot like that. And they would do two at a time sometimes, they would do it together. So they would deliver it like stand up Bob Newhart-y, but then they would have someone next to them play the other character. So an act out was done by the other guy. And so it would be kind of off the cuff, it would still be like written in a stand up style way, like they weren't writing scripts per se, but they delivered it. Like together, it was so, but it was also raucous and got everyone crazy, and people would like cheer and yell and that sort of stuff. And it's like, we don't want cheering, in stand up comedy. So we have to sort of teach them differently. But most of the guys that come to the shows are middle class or upper class. We have politicians, we have influencers, we have politicians' kids, you know, and then of course, Nairobi is like the center for. Money laundering, and so, you know, Somali pirates and their kids, and
Kenya is right next to Somalia, right?
Yeah. So the corruption is massive, and so it's like we know that like some of these rich people are, this is nefarious means at which they got, you know, the neighborhood, like there's drug lords I should be careful.
So some of y'all are trying to be the Don Rickles. Of, you know, where it's like, yeah, I got these guys that I know and hang out with. They like it's me. Totally, I like this.
Yes. Yeah. There's a story that there's a warring faction of Congolese warlords that send their children to the same school in the neighborhood next to where the comedy is happening. So it's like, but they get, you know, it's all fun. It's all fair game. It's, you know, it's peace. It's peace at the secondary school or at the boarding school for the kids while their dads are off trying to murder each other.
Oh wow!
You know, but also the tech industry is huge there, so it's a lot of the audience members are just working in IT.
Nairobi's like the, probably the biggest city in all of Africa or close or?
I wouldn't say it's not the biggest.
Okay.
But financially it is the it's like the stock market of East Africa is there.
Got it.
The financial center, so like size wise, no, probably not. But they call it Silicon Savannah. That's where mobile money was basically born.
There's a TV show.
Silicon Savannah.
Just do it. Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
But in Africa.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that, and I see a little in because Netflix has already greenlit it. They've already greenlit it. Episode hasn't been uploaded to the internet.
Yeah, and we've already greenlit it. We've already got a deposit.
Greenlit the Silicon Savannah.
Yeah, they've sent me Dogecoin. But, so that's the audience, but the comics, that's what's special. Comics from every demographic. So we have comics that actually commute in from refugee camps. Like these are legitimate refugees living in a refugee camp, but they love stand-up comedy, and they come to these shows at these wine bars where we have like 120 rich people watching them. We got guys who live in metal sheet housing. Like, they don't have their own toilet. They don't have their own bed. But and then there's comics that are definitely middle class or upper class who just, like, drive sweet cars and, you know, live in mansions or whatever. But we're all equals. And you're on a comedy stage. We're just equals. And so the audience loves us equally. We love each other equally. And so it's this really cool mixture of perspectives, too, because you're literally hearing someone's opinion, like, in a funny way about being a refugee or just making fun of other countries that are full of refugees. I mean, there's no holds barred. It is comedy. So and some audiences are just like, we don't want to hear, like, jokes about, you know, mass killings.
Yeah.
But the comics are like, no, this is my lived experience. And I got some shit talking to do.
True. Wow.
Yeah.
That's even more like, I love that because you'll have, you know, comics here that, you know, making fun of things that are not their lived experience,
right,
despite them, you know, kind of being a refugee, uh-huh, meaning they just sleep on other comics' couches.
Right.
But they don't, they have not lived through a mass killing.
Yeah. So comics there to lie about shit too. But, I mean, it's like here when, like, someone says, I smoked crack the other day. It's like, you've never smoked crack. Yeah. Don't tell a joke about that. These guys only exaggerate about getting laid. You know, it's like, we know you didn't get laid. We know that didn't happen with your girl. But if they're talking about some sort of, like, genocide, yeah, that's probably part of your history. Right? Yeah. Oh,
man.
So we have Rwandese guy. I mean, that's the guy that got a lot of pressure, at least recently, a Rwandese comic. He said some shit, and people were like, you can't do that. And he's like, I can. Yes, I can. Because we're still bold, you know?
Man, that's awesome to hear that these comics just come up there.
Yeah, and then at the end of the night at the open mic, we get like full resolution. What they do is they distribute all the, you know, 4K camera shots that they've taken, and everybody gets a copy of it. So everyone's got really great. You've seen the pictures I put on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I always have really sweet pictures. Yeah. It's because there's always a sweet photographer because they're literally trying to grow this scene in a very deliberate way. And it's totally happening. In fact, next weekend they have a show called Distant Relatives where they bring in a couple of American guys, black guys, and they're not letting me on the show because I'm like, I'm not part of that show.
Yeah.
But I'm the diversity hire at all these shows.
Yeah.
And they're just throwing the money at it to see if they can get the audience and grow the audience. And so they're having like 2 days of shows, and that open mic program is fed this paid show. And so and they pay comics. Like, one of the things is, like, when we do shows, we're doing it so we can make a living. And so all these open micers, when they finally do get a paid show, they're paid a couple hundred bucks.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's funny is that they bitch and complain. The open micers bitch and complain all the time. And I'm like, guys, you should not be complaining about anything. Like, you have no idea how good you have it. You have no idea what, like, comics.
We've taken the experience from, like, America and Canada, uh-huh, and cut out all the stupid bullshit that, uh-huh, comes with just, you know, living in America and wanting to do comedy.
Yeah.
Keep that shit over there.
Yeah.
Do it right here.
Do it correctly.
Correctly,
yeah,
here. That way you can not be muddled down in the swamp of shit that, you know, comes with,
yeah,
the
developing world
scene.
The developing world has a habit of doing something cool, which is leapfrogging the mistakes, like leapfrogging over problems. So, like, they never had telephones, so their very first infrastructure, well, they had them, but, like, not commonly. Their very first infrastructure was mobile towers. So mobile data and mobile connection is better than it is in West Texas. You can be out on safari, like, taking pictures of lions and have, you know, four
upload
bars.
Upload it then? Yeah.
You can't
go live if you want.
You can't drive to Amarillo without, like, you know, being, if you get kidnapped, you're screwed.
Ah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, 287 has total dead spots.
Yeah.
And it's not that far away from whatever, but over there. So in that way, they sort of leapfrogged, because we're upgrading. We're upgrading from landlines and trying to improve our infrastructure. They started with awesome infrastructure over there. Same thing with mobile money. They really launched into mobile money like 15 years ago or something. So, like, most people don't use cash in Kenya. You buy a banana or pay for your rental car or pay your electricity bill. It's just, you just text. Yeah. You text everybody for money all the time. And so it's super convenient, super easy. But comedy is doing the same thing where they're just like, let's skip all the nonsense.
Yeah.
Let's just do it right. and no one's...
Let's have open mics with crowds that pay attention.
Uh-huh.
And that'll make the comics really give a shit. Uh-huh. Instead of, like last night, being at a bar with 15 people and only you're lucky if three are actually paying attention.
Right.
That's going to... And that makes, you know...
We like, actually... One of the guys actually stopped a comedy show 3 weeks ago because the restaurant let in a table of people who weren't interested in comedy. It was regulars.
Yeah.
And so they started insulting this table, and the table was like getting angry. And it's like, it's a comedy show. Like, we're not here for the comedy show. He's like, well, then this show is over because our deal with the management is this is for comedy.
Oh, wow.
And so we actually like stopped it and moved it to a different room. We lost the venue, got angry about the whole move. But he's like, no, our deal is we bring in the customers and we treat this like comedy. If you don't want to do a comedy show, I'm not bringing you the customers.
Oh.
And so the stand-ups have enough power to walk the comedy show to another venue if it's not to their liking because they're so successful.
Oh, wow.
So and none of them can imagine, like, you've never waited for 4 hours to do 3 minutes of material at 1 o'clock in the morning for five people who don't care? Because I've done that 1,000 times in Dallas.
I can imagine, like, you like saying that to someone there, and I won't. Do an African accent because decency, but it's just like, no, I wouldn't waste my time doing that. That's my
time is money.
Response of a up and coming Kenyan comics, like, why would I waste so much time doing something that's worthless? It's exactly. Just like, yeah, it is. It comes back in your brain. You're like, yeah,
why did I do that?
Why would someone do that all the time?
All the time, day after day after day. Yeah, so, gosh, it's wonderful. I wish every comic could come out to Nairobi for sure. But they're franchising. They're getting into Rwanda. They're trying to get into Kigali, Rwanda, but they're in Tanzania, Dar es Salaam. And it's so great. It is funny, the amount of accents, though. There's a couple of Kenyan accents that, like, I have no idea what they're saying in English.
Have y'all brought Godfrey over?
No. I have not brought... Actually... Where's he from?
He's American, but right. His parents are, I believe, Kenyan. I believe I've seen clips of him talking about, you know.
Yeah, he might actually be coming over soon.
Because that's like immediately when you're.
I saw that guy's name recently. Yeah.
He comes through all the time, and he just goes. I think that's just his last name, or for
it. It could be.
But he has jokes about you know, Kenyan people. Like, he is Kenyan, but I believe. You know, if he was born there, he came when he was a child over here, or he's was born here. Okay. Don't know. But
I'll have to check. I feel like I saw his name recently. That'd be cool.
But he has jokes where he does like the Kenyan. You know,
well, that's the problem,
Kenyan
dude.
Accent.
I've been doing so much stand-up comedy, but it's all contextualized for Kenya.
Yeah. I can only.
None of it would work here.
Like, in my head, I was just kind of like, if place me in there, I'm doing a show. I was like, what?
You'd do fine. You define.
Well, I would have to figure out. I'm like, all right, well, I'm like, first of all, like, my new opener these days is about, I basically start off by saying I was born and raised inside a bowling alley. Probably wouldn't.
That would work. We have bowling alleys now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
We have like two.
Okay. And, oh, well, so again, there's so many things. I'm just like, well, how specific to America is that?
If you get into like, you know. Telecom company brand names, you have to, you know, don't say Sprint because no one will have any idea they think you're talking about.
Nobody knows what Sprint is here anymore.
I have been gone for a while.
That's like saying, hey,
is Sprint gone? Is there no more Sprint?
I think that's got merged.
I've been gone for 8 years.
Merged and swallowed up a long time ago. That's like saying, dial 1010321.
Okay.
You still use phone cards? Like, that's right. Sprint is as dead as those.
Okay,
things.
So. Definitely don't use that. Don't use that in America either as a reference. But yeah, there's some references.
You could, but it'd be a funny reference of
the past.
Yeah, people just like, wait, what?
Wait, how old is he? Yeah. But no, they get a lot of American stuff because they're inundated with American culture. But
that is true.
But American culture is not inundated with anything African.
Except Godfrey. Like, that's the only thing I could
write. Even today, I told someone I was living in Kenya. Oh, there's a lot of animals. Well, I mean, there's a lot of animals in America too.
Yeah,
you know, but you don't like live in the.
There's literally
forest.
A rabbit 5 feet from my car when I left yesterday.
Yeah,
Like, yeah, there's animals. Like, no, it's not like, yeah, you might have, you know, your occasional, what is, you always post about, was it Hyraxes?
Yeah, the Hyraxes are on my house. Well, and I lived a weird, and I lived such a weird experience. Like, people think that my experience is normal, and even the Kenyans think my experience is insane. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally insane. People come visit, they're like, do you live out here? You live in a, what, why do you live like this? I'm like, ah, I think it's cool.
Wait, so what is, how do you live in Kenya? Like, where, what's the...
So it doesn't make any sense. It's not at all typically like Kenyan, but I do live in a traditional house, which no one does because they don't need to make traditional houses anymore. It just so happens that I'm on a property where they had one.
Okay.
They had a traditional house there. And I was like, I can, and they're like, you can live there. I'm like, all right. And so it is made out of mud and it is made out of cow shit, but it's like painted inside and the floors are cool. And I have Alexa, so I can still like tell my lights to turn on.
Oh, okay.
You know, and everything. And I have electricity. But it does look a little weird because it's like it's made for like really short people and I have to duck everywhere.
Yeah.
And the front door just like comes up to like right here on my chest. And it is in the forest. It just so happens to also be in the forest, and the forest is right up against the national park. So my front door, all I see is the Nairobi National Park, which is like the only national park in the world that butts up to an urban center. So you can get a picture of like rhinos and a skyscraper at the same time.
Okay.
But I live on the other side where there is not a city, and I live in a little forest on the other side of the park. And so that's crazy. No one does that because there's no neighbors. And so that obviously makes it atypical. If there was tons of neighbors, it would be normal, but I have no neighbors, so it's not normal. But when I take pictures and put them on Facebook, people are like, that's what Africa's like. I'm like, well, that's kind of what my life is like. Yeah. And it's where artists, artists built the place and they make glass, they do glass blowing.
Oh.
And so there's all these sculptures everywhere made of glass and concrete, which is also not normal anywhere in the world. Do you live in a neighborhood that's filled with glass and concrete sculptures in the forest? That's porous with the national park. We have all the animals except for elephants.
This place is about to be gentrified as fuck.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
But so you said glass blowing. For sure. It made me think of this neighborhood in Fort Worth. That's, you know, Magnolia Street.
Uh-huh.
And right in the center of it is a glass blowing studio. They're cool.
Yep.
They always let me put up flyers there.
That's cool. Yeah,
to.
The glass blowers are cool. It's their neighbors that aren't.
The second I was like, glass blowing, I'm just like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You got some wineries and breweries right around the corner there.
Absolutely. In fact, they just put up a little cafe next door that has like gluten-free pizza.
Oh, see.
Yeah, so it's absolutely going to happen. But in the meantime,
it's over. Find a new part of Africa to go to. It's
going
to
have to go deeper.
It's done.
But I didn't go there to live in America.
Yeah.
You know, I like living in a... I grew up in a forest. I don't know if you know, but I grew up in the Northwest.
Okay.
You ever seen Twilight?
I know of it, yeah.
That's the exact neighborhood I'm from is where those books are set.
Oh, really?
Yeah, born and raised there. So...
I know that. I didn't know that you're from
the
Northwest.
I came to Texas when I was like 19.
Okay.
Yeah. And started comedy like right after, probably 2021 is when I started. And I probably met you like 2 years later.
Oh, okay.
And
were you doing juggling and
Yeah, I'd always done
before.
Before, but I went solo right about the time I met you, and that went really really well. I made lots of money.
What do you mean? So, you juggled with someone else or going back and forth?
Well, as a puppeteer, we had an ensemble, but there's no money in that. It's like being in a band. It's just hard to make a living.
Yeah.
But working solo 100%, you make way more money. So that's when I started juggling and doing magic and stuff. But then I just loved comedy. It's so much better. And comedy improves all the other art forms. Like I was never a good juggler, but I had the chops of a stand-up comedian, so I think I was funnier than my peers.
Oh, okay.
You ever seen Tommy Drake from Houston?
No, I don't. No, I haven't.
He's a stand-up. He does great. He's really, really funny. But he started as a juggler as well. But stand-up makes your juggling better, but juggling does not make your stand-up better. It's not a two-way thing at all.
I gotta juggle these bits. That doesn't really it's probably just
it's way cheesier too. It's like high energy and silly. I just love, I don't know about you, I feel like I like every style of comedy. Like I enjoy almost everything.
Yeah, I prefer, for my own personal taste, when someone has some energy. Now when I say that, I'm not saying that they'll like be like a Brian Regan type bouncing around everywhere.
Right.
But when they're just so their delivery so slow and not in a good way, and I'm just kind of like, I wish I could.
Quality,
I wish I had a taser where I could just zap some life into them right now.
Yeah.
But it can be done so many ways. Right. And when it's done well in...
Do you like slapstick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. Are you talking about like stand-up or just like
no,
comedy
I'm actually being comedy in general.
Oh, yeah. As long as it's not hacky and
right.
I can't... It's not spelled out for me and I don't see it coming a million miles away.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as it's done fine. Yeah. Like, what was it? Angie Tribeca. I didn't finish it, but that was a show. It came on TBS, had Quincy Jones's, Rashida Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically just an homage to like Naked Gun
mm-hmm.
and those kind of movies, just full of those kind of jokes.
Oh, okay.
Just those dumb, just because it was about cops.
Uh-huh.
So easy, you know.
Yeah.
There you go. It's uh-huh. about cops. You got Rashida Jones and, you know, plenty of like guest stars and whatnot. And, you know, you're making dumb like Leslie Nielsen, you know, type yeah. delivery. Just stick with that serious delivery of, you know, dumb jokes.
Yeah.
As long as it's done right and it doesn't suck.
Yeah, as long as it's funny.
That's what's great about comedy. It can be done in so many ways. Like, that's why I like, you know, anything from like reading David Sedaris to, you know, hearing Lewis Black rant.
I'm reading Calypso right now. It's intense. It's like a really serious, it's not serious, but it's Sedaris is writing like about like death and family and like hard stuff. It's great.
And then I love his sister shit, which is fucking way out there.
Dude. On Mandalorian?
I haven't.
Have you watched Mandalorian?
The first season. Of all these new Star Wars shows, uh-huh. I've only seen the first. I'm just a little burnout on Star Wars
It's so good, though. It's impressive.
I had a book 500 pages thick called Guide to the Star Wars Universe that I would just randomly open pages and uh-huh. read. And so
I did that with my Muppet Show books. Always just reading about the Muppet Show.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I have some friends that are super, like, what's crazy is growing up, I never watched any like Muppet Show.
Uh-huh.
Maybe because, you know, I was born in 84. Yeah. So if I watched anything, it was Muppet Babies.
Yeah.
And that was fine for a kid.
Yeah.
And I never really watched any of the Muppet movies. My sister like never watched those, so it was just kind of in a like a blind spot of growing up.
Okay.
You know, it's like, you know, bands like exist. Some bands I find out, I'm like, man, I love this band. Never listened to them before, but
yeah.
They're always like in like the recommended of bands I love,
mm-hmm.
but they just kind of exist in a blind spot. And I want to say the Muppets were always in there,
okay.
just because.
Yep, just exactly the wrong years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was just, yeah, I was born, and then my interest divulged. Yeah, I like plenty of things similar to that.
Yeah.
Not too many things similar to the Muppets. You're probably too young
for even the fantasy stuff, like the Labyrinth and the Dark Crystal. Like, it didn't probably hit
plenty
you
of people my age, like, definitely went back and found that shit and uh-huh. were very obsessed with it
right.
and really liked it. And I probably watched it. I was like, but it just didn't catch me.
Right.
I may have saw it too later on in life for me to, like, really take hold because I was interested in other things.
Yeah, girls. Yeah,
probably. let's make things obtainable, you know, realistic. I'm talking about sci-fi here.
that's true. Okay.
I'm like, oh no. I'm into the Star Wars and Trek.
Yeah.
Ooh, Babylon 5. What's that about?
Yeah, it's good. I love to love things. So a career in comedy is really interesting in Kenya. So there's one lady who her name is Mamito. And she might be a genius. She's comedically legitimately just knows funny like other people don't. She gets, you know, punchlines perfectly. You know, she kind of gets it. It's natural. And can't make a living doing stand up at all, but she does make a living through Instagram. She has like 2.8 million followers in Kenya, or 2.2 million or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the comics, they just get big on social media, and they're sponsored by brands.
Oh, okay.
Every day there's some new product that just wants to be on her Instagram. So that's how she makes a living.
That's not bad. Does she have to promote the products, or they just kind of like have their ad in the bottom?
It can. It's just sometimes she's actually make content at the shop that she's promoting,
okay.
or sometimes it'll be like right now she's doing Netflix. She's promoting Netflix. That's not how we do it at all.
No,
not even close. And it's quite nice for the guys who get the followers. But I mean, like, she has more followers than Brian Regan. What? Like, how's this possible? But the mobile culture is so strong there. That's how people have fans.
Mm.
I was going through security at the airport, and someone goes, "Hey, Darren, how you doing?" And I go, "Whoa, well, how do you know me? My son's name is Darren." Like, yeah, but that's not an answer. Like, how do you know me? She says, "Oh, me and my husband, we follow you on Instagram." Like, okay.
But was this like when you flew
just,
back into
just
Kenya?
2 days ago.
Oh, okay. Oh no, you came here
on the way through security there to get to here.
Yeah, okay, got it. Okay.
But every day, someone in the street, "Hey, Darren."
Like, wow.
What? It's because of social media. One of the best comedians, dude named Terrence, he put me in a video as a token white guy, and his video went viral. It got like a million views in like 5 days, and so everyone recognizes me because I'm like the only tall white dude with long hair.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he just called me, "Hey, Darren, we're gonna do something on Wednesday." I'm like, "All right." And then I come over and he's like, "This is gonna be really big." I'm like, "Whatever." Everybody says that, right? Everybody
sure.
says that. And then all of a sudden, there's a million views. I'm like, "Whoa, what does he know?" So he calls me like a month later. "Hey, Darren, we're gonna do another one. Can you come over like Wednesday morning or Tuesday morning?" I'm like, "Okay, sure." And so I show up and we do it a little bit longer. But there's one guy at the video camera. That's it. No script. And then again, another 1.5 million views in like a week. I'm like, what the heck? And so then he calls me like another month later and he's like, "This is going to be epic." So he goes, "This is going to be epic." And I'm like, "All right." And so we show up. I show up. Listen, there's no script. There's no papers anywhere. I just show up to make a YouTube video. And there's a big crew there. Not only like two camera guys, but like lots of actors and stuff. Just friends of his that he's just called to come out. And he just says, "Okay, go over there and say this." But he's the main guy. He's the funny guy.
Yeah.
And we're all just bit parts. I show up. There's helicopters. I'm like, what's going on here? He's like, "Yeah, I got some helicopters for this one." I'm like, are you kidding? He's a comic, and he's like, "All right." And everyone got to ride in helicopters except for me.
Oh,
but I was in the caravan of like other vehicles. So we go to this other resort. Some of them go and shoot in the helicopters, and then I show up a little bit later because cars aren't as fast as helicopters.
And land based transport.
And then, so we're doing some more bits, and he's like, "Okay, everybody act like this. You know, I'm going to say this," and or he doesn't say what he's going to say. He just improvs. But he's also very funny. So this is another genius. I think this is the two geniuses in Kenya that I know that are like, I've never seen anybody think the way they do. And he's like, "All right, everyone put on these life vests and get in the boats." We're like, "What boats? Like, what's going on? Like, I thought we're just doing a little bit, you know?" And so suddenly we're on an island. But in the middle of the thing, he goes, "Darren, your name is Dr. Mark such and such. And, you know, and you're this character." I'm like, "Okay." So I walk. So they're like, "Action. Okay, start." And he waves me over, and I walk over into the scene, and he goes, "Darren." And then he continues talking, and they go cut, and I go, hey Terrence, dude, you didn't use my character name. You called me Darren. That's my name." He goes, "Oh, we'll just keep it." Yeah. So now everyone knows my name. Because it got millions of views again. It became part of the national consciousness. Like the stuff that he was saying, it became like Saturday Night Live like catchphrases, like people saying "swing" or people,
wow.
or, you know, whatever, or you know, it, or like Steve Martin saying "wild and crazy guy" or "excuse yeah. me," you know, whatever. Like it became part of the national
Bye-bye
language.
Now.
So people
Bye-bye.
Would say that they would like yeah. shout catchphrases at me now, and they just know who and they know my name. Because he actually said my name in the thing. And so I'm this weird, like, only white guy celebrity in the country.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he would call me, like, "Hey, are you free on Friday?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yeah, they're going to fly us to this resort." And I'm like, what do we got to do?
I can actually fly in something now?
Yeah. So we did fly. But yeah, good point. I should have said that to him. But, and we just had to wave. It was like an appearance.
Wow.
Like Terrence and his crew are going to be
fees.
There. Yeah, but yeah. Got a free hotel and all this
wow.
stuff. Free flights, free food. And just get a wave to the audience.
Are you going to, I'm blanking on his name, Tom. I was going to say, are you going to get like a talk show now in Nairobi? Like, what's his name? Sorry. The guy, Tom.
Green?
No, he had a talk show in the Netherlands.
Oh.
he's a stand-up comic, Tom something or other. He made a lot of weed jokes.
I forget now. I was gonna go ultra school, but it's like, did I just go to East Africa to make it as a comedian? Like, is that what just happened?
I went through a project hand up, and then next thing I know,
I went there to do a charity. Now all of a sudden, I'm making it in the comedy world, and I can't tell any of my jokes in America because they're all contextualized incorrectly.
Unless you come to Dallas,
and oh yeah, I could talk to I could do a show for the Kenyan
consulate,
scene. Would love that,
or go through them and be like, hey, odd proposal. You know a lot of the Kenyans here in Dallas, I assume.
Yeah, actually, that would actually work. I could probably do a really good job. I could make. We should do a show, because yeah, and also they started doing celebrity roasts in English as well. And so I got to do a bunch of those, and they actually broadcast those on the local streaming network, so people see me on TV and stuff. So I'm like on TV, internet, and live as a hobby.
Yeah.
While I'm actually doing a real job, doing
real job
intestinal
with
worms education for children and families.
Meaningful, you know, execution and results.
It's so weird. So I get to do all this kid stuff during the day with the puppets, like all goofy, like childish stuff, and then at night I get to be a full fledged adult.
How long have you been in Kenya?
8 years.
8 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, primarily living there, like,
yeah,
literally, like,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know, let's say 98%
yeah,
of your
definitely
98%. Days there.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, you know, you're here now in America to, you know, help move.
Moving some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. My office had to move. So, and all my personal belongings are there. So I'm going through all this, like, old stuff that I used to, but part of my American life. 4 of those boxes are just Pez dispensers. Like, I have like a Pez dispenser. Like, an 800 Pez dispensers. Like, I don't know what it seemed really cool at the time.
Hey, there's a market if you need to.
I think I have 2 Braille Playboys as well.
2 Braille?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I used to do that as a bit, but it was actually true. Wow. Like, what would you tell if you're a dad and you find your kid at that? You're like, what? You'll go blinder.
I think I remember that. Yeah. I remember
it. But I do that as a dumb joke, but I know it's true. I do have them.
Wow. See, I'd hold on to those. That's...
Yeah, I can't.
Take them back with you.
Yeah. Just charity. Give them to the school.
They'd be like, no, just for the visually impaired. No,
for the visually impaired. See what they...
Okay, let the
I wonder what the nuns would say.
Oh, yeah. They're a fun group.
They're not. I had a meeting with nuns like 2 days ago in Kenya. So some sort of conservation show project where we're doing some sort of thing about tree planting and the intersection of conservation and health issues. And it was like all nuns. I wasn't prepared for that.
Like,
one of them was cool.
Should I put my hair in a ponytail for
like,
this?
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I just, they have such low expectations for Americans.
Oh,
like, Americans are dirty people to them. Like, our shoes are
awesome.
Always dirty. We're always dressed casual for no reason when everyone else is dressed up.
They're not wrong, baby. They're not wrong.
Yeah, it's wild. Like you can get away with a lot because they just, whatever we have sent over there in the past has definitely lowered the bar for expectations of the behavior.
To do the hack thing, not the hack joke, but it's just kind of like, hey, turns out, all these teams on these T-shirts did not win the championship.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe there's a residual kickback. Just kind of like,
It is amazing, the shirts that people wear over there. It really is cool. Like, I'll see a guy wearing a vote for Pedro shirt. I'm like, yes.
Oh,
he has no idea what the context is for that.
This is where this Hot Topic have like a surplus store.
Oh, dude, you'll see like, you're into like industrial music. You'll see industrial band like I can't pronounce it. Einsterzand and Neubauten.
I only really know
that was
Rammstein.
Yeah, so this is predates Rammstein, but it was they didn't use electrical. I think it was mostly acoustic smashing of stuff,
like power tools. And...
Yeah, yeah, but they're an industrial band. But you'll see those T-shirts and stuff. Like, whoa, you'll see the Smiths or whatever on someone. It's like they have no context. And Mamita was wearing a Kurt Cobain shirt. She's like, oh, is this somebody? Like, oh my gosh.
I respect that more than like you'll literally see like 7, 8 year olds wearing a Nirvana shirt. And I'm just like, I don't think
Yeah, they're pretending it's cool. Whereas someone who just like, I just like the design. That, no idea who Kurt Cobain is.
That's who I really want to go up to, just like 7, 8-year-old in a Nirvana shirt. Be like, name me 3 songs. Do it.
Yeah. How old was he when he died?
Yeah. Who? Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I love, because all of our shirts end up there. It's true. It really is true. Totally ruins the market.
But it becomes a great thrift store.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, where's the awesome thrift store around here? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. They're going to the markets and find really cool stuff. I don't think you can find these jeans, though.
Yes. To anybody listening, Darren is wearing a throwback. Let's just say, not a JNCO. It is a minor league JNCO type.
These are huge. I could put 3 legs inside of these pant legs. What happened was it was an emergency trip to come to USA for this podcast.
No, yes.
And because you invited me. So I was like, I got to get on a plane. But I didn't bring any clothes. I was like, I have clothes back at my storage.
Okay.
But these are from the 90s. And I was like, oh, sweet. Because I was doing some moving stuff around. I was like, I shouldn't wear these nice jeans. I should find some old clothes. So I found these.
Found these like, old, I can't believe, but still nice jeans.
Yeah, they're in great condition, but they're ridiculous.
Are you going to take these back with you?
The clown pants. I think it'll be cool. There might be some like really cool like Kenyan dudes who just want to dress retro. It might happen. Because I asked one of the guys, I was like, hey, when does it come around? I have some 20-year-old friends who are like into retro stuff. Okay. Like, is 90s cool yet? And they're like, no, 90s is not cool yet. Like, but you think it will be? Yeah, probably. You know? Oh, yeah. Because I got the clothes for it.
We all, like, a lot of us remember like the JNCOs, but I remember also, you know, the big kind of flared out pant style. There's also like the swishy material version of that.
Oh.
Whatever that material was. But they are also just still big as fuck.
Like MC Hammer pants?
Sort of. So they're basically like JNCOs.
I don't know what a JNCO is because I'm older than you.
Okay. Well, it's so take the pants you have on now.
Okay.
But bigger.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's what's funny. I was just like, oh, okay. You know, bigger. He'll know what I'm talking about. JNCO this, JNCO that. No.
Is it a brand name?
Yeah, it was a brand name. Oh. JNCO. And when I was in.
Did skaters wear them?
Maybe not, because it would probably be hard to skate while wearing them.
Oh.
So these were dudes, especially so in the late 90s when nu metal was, I want to say, this is like maybe the 25th or so episode. I've easily mentioned and talked about nu metal in probably 20 of these. It's a recurring theme.
I believe you.
Also, 3 of these.
What I know of you.
3 of these episodes are with guys in a nu metal band. So,
okay.
And who unabashedly love it and defend it, and I'm joining them. So big in the nu metal at late 90s.
Okay.
When nu metal was up and coming, Korn, Limp Bizkit, Linkin Park, really getting out there. The spiky blonde hair.
Yep.
Maybe some accessories, maybe some necklaces, maybe some, you know, wrist stuff, you know, not really watches, but just whatever. Whatever shirt, could be a band shirt or mm-hmm. whatever, skate company. And then the pants were just, they got so wide. So okay. big and so wide.
Okay.
And, you know, JNCO was the brand.
I'm with you.
And you could
now.
Probably okay. find some knockoff ones, you know, if you just couldn't afford the JNCO. And
I have a whole section of pop culture that is missing from my life because I went on tour in 97 through like 2001.
See, that checks out.
I didn't watch TV, didn't read magazines.
Oh, wow. So,
I was 100% touring, like behind the wheel of a car or performing only. And not experiencing culture.
Mm.
So I sort of missed out on Limp Bizkit. No, because that was a little bit earlier. Limp Bizkit was...
It was around that, like, they were still, like, 96. Around in the early 2000s. They've actually had a resurgence of sorts. I mean, they put out a new album.
I bet you could talk about this for a long time.
Not a long, long time. My friends could talk even longer. Okay. But, like, Fred Durst kind of has this... He kind of plays in just being like their latest album that they released in 2021 is called Still Sucks.
Oh, that's awesome. So they're like self-aware.
Very. Yeah. And okay. Fred is less of the, he's kind of,
he was the guy that
in
wore
his motif.
Fitted cap backwards or something, like the red cap.
Red.
That's the guy.
Baseball cap. Yeah. Not sure what, it could be any, red baseball cap backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just, that was his iconic sign. Now, in his motif, in his presentation, nowhere near musically, he's kind of got this weird little Les Claypool vibe going on where he just kind of wears
my name is
he wears a wig. sometimes.
Oh, really?
Just matches it with nice. like a gray wig and has like real gray facial hair, like a mustache.
Yeah.
Because he's mostly bald. And so I think at a point he's wearing that in the, in aviators, but just kind of like wears like a weird design but goes out and fully embraces that he is, the singer of Limp Bizkit.
That's great. That's really cool.
But yeah, they are very self-aware now.
Well, we were talking about Bob Goldthwait in the car, and like his album that came out was called I Don't Mean to Insult You, but you look like Bobcat Goldthwait. That was the name of his album. Yeah. So I love it when guys like are huge and then they get self-aware of what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is. Well, I'm self-aware that
this is 10 hours long.
No, we're approaching hour 15, but we can probably wrap this up. You have a lot of fun packing to do,
I
assume.
Let me encourage everyone to definitely try to go to Africa to watch comedy, because it's great there.
Hey, this has been a good pitch for
if you're a comedian, plans to come out. Like, you'd go, it's $1,000 to fly there. Comedians will put you up when you're there.
Mm.
You can get gigs, and they're well paying. I've been paid hundreds of dollars to do 10 minutes.
That is way more than we get.
It's nuts. It's really nuts.
Than we get for features.
I know. So definitely do that.
Which apparently has not increased since even before I started doing comedy.
No, it doesn't change, right?
The feature pay, opener pay, all the same. If you're,
And you can check.
We'll book you the day before, which I found out yesterday. I got a show tonight and Wednesday.
Oh, sweet.
Opening up for Dusty Slay.
Okay.
I think he's out of like Tennessee or something like that. He definitely has he wears like a trucker hat, beard, long hair,
mm-hmm.
glasses. Definitely has like a accent. And I'm very excited. But
look has changed.
I found out yesterday that I inquired about doing it, but they like booking people day before, a couple days before, hours before.
At which club?
Addison Improv.
Oh. Oh, wow. Okay.
So. But Dusty is like coming through doing a Tuesday show and a Wednesday show.
I should go. So I want to go. I haven't been to Addison in a long time. And I feel like me and you switch places with our look.
Yeah.
You used to have the long
June hair. June 2020, I got the long hair and the beard.
So I started growing COVID. So March 2020, yeah. Now I'm a hair farm. But also you can check Darren Around the World if you want to see wacky photos of what it's like to actually live in Africa. It's not just animals and people, naked people.
Not all hyraxes, but there's plenty of...
Yeah.
At times, there'll be plenty of hyrax shots.
Yeah, I am a little obsessive about a particular animal, but a lot obsessive about a particular animal.
Hey, you live in their territory, so...
Yeah, but dude, if you're a comedian, please think about the rest of the world. It's so great in other places, too. Comedians listen to the podcast, right?
The ones that they're on.
We're all the same.
And what's funny is, scheduling at this time and here, and it's going through any of the comics, whether they just are hungover or forget or just can't respond and apologize later, there's the hardest mother. I'm like, I come to you with the podcast, so just let me know when and where. Hopefully, the when is where they live or. Uh-huh. On location, bands and rehearsal spaces, and there's zero follow through. I'm like, I'm trying to go out of my way to come interview you and now you're giving me less of a reason to want to do that, but whatever, I need episodes. I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
But anyone that's not like an active comedian in America is the hardest person to nail down. But all my non-comedian friends, musicians, Yeah, cool. That sounds great. All right.
That's hilarious.
That time sounds good.
Yeah, you sent me a message on Facebook, and I was like, yep.
Yeah, that's... I'm like, it can't be this easy.
It's that easy. Well, it's easy to get into a Santa Claus studio.
We are in a...
We are literally...
In a literal Santa Claus studio.
Right now. Where they make clothing for Santa Clauses. It's called Santa's Tailor. If anyone listening to this podcast is interested in wearing Santa's clothes...
The real Santa's clothes.
The real Santa's clothes. You can go to Santa's Tailor on whatever, and you'll see the amazing place we're sitting in, filled with red and green fabric everywhere.
It's funny. I was hoping that you would continue to turn around behind you, because this entire time, right behind you is Mr. Bill.
Mr. Bill? Oh, there's a little Mr. Bill here.
Yeah. The guy's name is Bill. Oh, so
who owns this place?
Oh, wow. Okay.
That must be why.
And what's funny is I'm proud of myself for not being
Mr. Bill.
Too distracted
by little Mr.
And
I'm glad you caught that. I would have not even noticed at all.
Because it's literally like when Darren's in a little bit of a rocking chair right now. So when he goes forward a little bit, I just see Mr. Bill there. And I'm just like,
Oh, yes, Mr. Bill.
Luckily, my attention span hasn't been completely destroyed. You know,
it's funny.
It's not just like, I'm like, oh, that Mr. Bill. It's like that's in Kingpin where they're hustling dudes on the road in all these different lanes. And the hot chick that's with them can't distract these like farmer guys. So they go and get a goat.
Nice.
And so these guys, they can't bowl right because there's goats there. Because they're fucking goats.
Yeah, that's true. What's the joke I make about Somali people?
What?
Somalians.
Wait, what joke?
Just about fucking goats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's appropriate at all. Oh. But it's a stereotype.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See, none of my jokes are going to work in America.
Because also you're like, that is very, you know, again, you're the authority on this.
No.
So it's just kind of like,
I'm authority
wait,
in this
what?
Room.
Do we just tread into, because I don't edit these things. I don't know how to edit shit out. I'm not.
Yeah.
But so, no, that makes, the rednecks of.
The rednecks of Africa.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. See, that's what's, maybe it can translate
if the setups are really long,
yes,
and Mike gets some punchlines.
Yeah, and if you really want to do a disservice to stand-up comedy and really explain the jokes.
Explain my jokes. Yeah, there's no way. I have no career here. But you can still follow me at Darren Around the World on Instagram. But my charity also requires donations to continue. So projecthandup.org is where people can actually learn more and also donate. We have Patreon as well.
Excellent.
Same thing, Project Hand Up. If you see puppets in Project Hand Up, that's us. We're based out of Texas, but not really anymore. I have an office here, obviously. But, yep.
Oh, good. You said all the things that it would take me to stumble through. But yeah, Project Hand Up.
I have a podcast.
Do you?
Oh, actually, you know what? I could promote my own podcast. I've never have. It's called Me, I Am Mental.
Okay.
Me, I Am Mental. And it's a couple of dudes talking about mental health. From an African perspective and an American perspective, because I'm still American.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You literally mentioned that before we started recording. Right?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't even know if I've never promoted it before because I'm waiting until we bank more episodes. I don't like to start with like, we have 3 episodes.
And you have interviews. So, you know, those are like evergreen. You can kind of like,
the interviews work.
Kind of like what I do. You can listen to the episode you want to listen to and then go listen to all the others.
Yeah. About all I do is listen to podcasts. It's most of my media, I think. I don't absorb much else besides podcasts.
It's a good time killer, especially if you.
I just do it when I'm puttering around. If I'm in the kitchen or something, or on a in a vehicle or something.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing.
All right, man. I appreciate this. This is
dude. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really nice.
Crossing an ocean that's where I was like, ooh, opportunity for the podcast. He's not. Hear that often.
Well, thanks for reminding me of the cool Mitch Hedrick story. That was nice.
Yeah. And I always mention you, the context there. And I'm glad I get that story right every time I tell it. I tell
you
it.
Do. It's weird
many
that
times.
The story is correct.
That's exactly awesome. It's just, not a commentary. It's just, it's great to know that he's kind of that guy that
he really thought he was.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that you also saw him again at the Majestic.
Yeah.
And Louis Black.
Just real quick.
Yes.
This is the very first time I did comedy. The very, very first time.
Okay.
Did the Dean Lewis class where you graduate, you get to do a show at the Improv. Mitch Hedberg was the headliner.
Damn.
So the first time I was on stage, the showcase for new comics ended and Mitch Hedberg went on stage. I didn't know who he was. Never heard of him. And people said, you got to see this guy on stage. And so, because I didn't know who he was, because it was too new. And that was him. And it was that same weekend where George Carlin was asked by Larry King on CNN, who's your favorite comedian right now? And he goes, Louis Black and Mitch Hedberg. And that's when I was like, wait, that's the guy that was at the club. And so that's when I ran up and saw him the first time. So yeah, my very first time in comedy on stage, I shared it with Mitch Hedberg.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
I did a roast one time for David Jessup.
Mm-hmm.
And made fun of Dean Lewis. He didn't know who I was. So that was really funny. I'm ripping hard into him, his class, and he's just like, wow, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know who you are.
Have you ever thought
like,
that's maybe why?
Yeah, I never took your class. That's why you don't know who I
am. Dang.
Man, all right. Well, man, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate this. Godspeed back to Africa and all your travels and all your endeavors, man. This is
right.
You're doing the Lord's work, your work, man, you're living a life, man. I'm envious. It's it's fascinating.
Next time I come on, I'll tell you stories about lions.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll do that next time. Next time you move in office.
10 more years. Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, guys. This has been the Breckening Podcast. Check me out on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I do stand-up comedy. I post about those. I don't know when these shows get uploaded, so just follow me on social media. Y'all have a good day.